this week, or today even, on the WWE Network, WWE finally released what everyone has been asking for. You know, screw those, like, 90s Thunders or anything else that they have in their weird archive. They finally dropped WWE ECW, and joining me to talk about it is the man that was there at the time, actually writing the television show, Dave Lagana. How you doing, Dave?
I'll just start with, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're just going to apologize for all of
what you did? Well, here's the thing. This was some of the most fun, and obviously, I think if you look at the 2006 stuff, you know, it was almost a tale of two companies, because I was there, obviously, for the first part of 2006, which could be categorized the Heyman era, and then the 2007, which, ironically or funny enough, was Dusty Rhodes, Shawn Michaels, and I, which I think I've told the Shawn story years ago, but I can tell it when we get to it. So, hello.
So, when you were, like, assigned ECW, because you were writing SmackDown before this, weren't you?
Yes.
So
yes.
When you were, like, moved to ECW, was it just like, were you enthusiastic? Was it?
Well, it's funny if I mean, God, what was this now? 11 years ago, right? I mean, it's actually probably 11 years ago around this time. I had been running SmackDown for 4 years, 5 years when I started. I took it over in 2003, so I had 3 full years of writing SmackDown. I was just actually talking to Brian Gewirtz about this when I saw him in New York a couple of weeks ago, and it's just like, nobody knows how hard that job is when you're pitching Vince week in, week out. And I did it for 3 full years on SmackDown, and you know, he did it on Raw for upwards of 11 years. It just gets to be grinding. So by that point in SmackDown, they were grooming Alex Greenfield, who has a podcast, I believe, on MLW.com, you know, to take over my job. And what's funny is they didn't tell any of us what they were doing until after the fact. So, you know, that when ECW came up, they're like, listen, we want you to help Paul and make sure that the show gets done. And, you know, people have pontificated that I was put there to babysit him, but he and I always worked well together. He trained me the first year, so I was there to make sure the show got done because it was a high priority. And I don't remember what the license fee or whatever, but it was obviously a big deal because before this, you know, it was developed originally to be a internet-only show. And in early meetings, it's funny now to watch sort of the evolution of YouTube, because I think this show came on. Was it the year YouTube debuted? Was it 2006? You know, we had a meeting where we discussed doing the show a segment a day, which is kind of funny because that's basically what YouTube is now. Like, imagine this show, but a new segment dropped every day. So Seg 1, Seg 2, it was shockingly designed to be ahead of its time in a lot of its thing as a digital daily brand, as opposed to just a one-hour digital show. So that was the original incarnation. And then when Sci-Fi came in, it became what it, I guess, was or is or shall ever be known as. So yeah, I was basically transitioned the week of it happening. I actually think I even wrote the SmackDown show that aired the same night as the zombie ECW show. But then I got transitioned over. I started writing with Paul the second show. So I take zero credit for the first show. Although I am the writer of record on the zombie promo. So, you're welcome.
Did you script the R's?
Well, it's funny. Bruce Pritchard talked about it on his podcast where he talked about ECW. Originally, it was an alien. The network did not like it. The decision to change it was that day. And I remember, I don't know if it was the guy who was playing the alien was also the guy that played the zombie who is no longer with us. But it went from being an alien. Then it was like, well, somebody from cable television is going to welcome ECW back. So we had like a chef character. So they ran out of a chef thing. And I think it was Paul, or I don't want to assign credit on who came up with the zombie. But it was, you know what's funny? I was watching that clip today. Somebody put up a GIF of it. It shockingly was a lot closer to a lot of the stuff they used to do with 911 in early ECW, which is funny. People hated on it. But if you go back and watch 911 early segments, they used to send out a guy in a New Jersey Devils, jersey, a hockey jersey, and 911 come chokeslam him. They sent out Jungle Jim Steele once, and he got chokeslammed by 911. So the idea with Sandman caning this ridiculous character was shockingly a lot closer to the original ECW than some people would admit. But I don't think I actually wrote. I think we just put zombie groans, and I don't think the format – I don't know if we ever changed it to say zombie in the format. And this is where I wish I actually had all my old formats from then. The only format, shockingly, I still have from WWE is the Atlanta, Georgia, Austin Walks Out format, which I found over Christmas. So I don't have a lot of my old ECW formats.
You were writing ECW on a WWE show. Was there like a pressure to recreate the old vibe of ECW or do your own thing or find the middle ground?
It was a weekly fight. I'll just say that. You know, Paul, you know, I think, you know, and this has been covered over and over again, so I won't speak too much to Paul's thoughts because you can, I'm sure, find it in many places that he's done interviews. It was pretty, like, I think if you go back and watch the Hammerstein show, and my timing might be off because I think the Hammerstein show actually took place after the RVD arrest. If you remember, the RVD arrest came, I mean, how many weeks in? Not even, like, so it was, the show debuted on June 27th, right? So I think two shows had gone by? Three shows before the RVD arrest, and the brand pivoted when Big Show, when they did the angle with Heyman and Big Show. I mean, literally, ECW won, RVD was champion. Two, I guess, Sabu. I'm just looking at the thing. Kurt Angle and RVD take on Randy Orton and Edge in the main event. And then three was Edge plots take on, I mean, literally, this was a WWE show. So, remember the first show did a number. It did like 2.2. It did a 2.2 rating, I believe.
I think it was even higher than that. It was a 2.8.
Think about that number. Yeah, or whatever. So what I mean is it's unique oxygen. Now, I don't remember what the viewers were. I, again, wish I would have saved all of this information because the ratings information is a little different. But
yeah,
I think what's interesting, if you were to kind of lay NXT over top of this, sort of if you literally, because the original idea with ECW was for it to be very much like NXT, and if you look at it, it kind of is.
That's with what it became, the idea, anyway, yeah.
Well, no, if you just even look at what NXT now is, former TNA people and hot independent rookies plus developmental.
Yeah.
So what is this? This is
former ECW people, hot independent rookies, and developmental.
Yeah. So just it's literally
ECW for TNA, basically, yeah.
Which is ironic, and it's, you know, and that's basically the direction we really pushed it in 2007 after Paul flamed out and I had a very tumultuous 1 month transition period, you know, that I've written about in the past. But, you know, it was probably the biggest challenge because, you know, having written SmackDown and then obviously having to take over ECW, and I remember sitting in a meeting with Vince and Kevin Dunn and I think Michael Hayes and everything after Paul had been gone, and they were hating on it so bad. I'm like, guys, drop the letters. You hate it. Y'all hate it. Just call it Tuesday Night Extreme, like Friday Night SmackDown, and just moved on. They're like, no, the network has bought this. I was like, but every week we're just killing on it. Like, even on air, it just got to be a point where just, like, what was the point of it? So, you know, the brand had a pivot, which is funny. Again, it led into the debut of NXT eventually. You know, I don't think anybody would say there was one moment that was authentic or one full show that was authentic to the original ECW. I think the original One Night Stand was, but even the second one was not authentic to it. And, it's a shame because if they had said that NXT, or I guess let's say 3 years ago, NXT was going to be a third brand on cable television, I think there'd be a lot of excitement, but I also think it probably would have had the same fate if it would have had to deal with the same altitude and oxygen that this brand had to.
Was the resentment just because of the ECW name, which is, it's kind of an oxymoron that you bring back this ECW name because people really like it, but then you just kind of resent it because it's ECW?
Well, you have to understand, the wounds of ECW were only 5 years old. And a lot, I mean, again, look at the amount of talent. And this was even after the Dudleys left and Rhino. You know, there was still a lot of ECW talent on the roster. And again, this is 11 years ago. It's shockingly very similar to TNA with a lot of the talents that were very over 5 years prior with this brand and, in, you know, seven to some, you know, still could go to a point. And Vince bought it, and it's very interesting. And again, Paul's a very bombastic person. You know, this was his baby. I won't say if, say, Dixie sold TNA to WWE and they were going to do this now, you know, after a sale, that it wouldn't have gone the same way. But I think you all know it would. Do you know what I mean? If TNA was on WWE TV, I guess it technically is, but you know, it would be managed exactly the same.
So the brand, like the infamously is the December Dismember pay per view, which I think is roundly criticized as one of the worst pay per views of all time.
Yep.
And the
you're welcome. You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah, you did that. You did that to us, Dave.
I'm sorry again. sorry. So,
but like after that, the entire show did kind of pivot overall. It just stopped being like it had the ECW name and the title, but it stopped trying to be ECW.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of things had happened, and ultimately it needed to. Although we did end up doing the New Breed story, which, again, got us through the summer and then to the... So, see, for me, the my time there was almost three chapters, because the first chapter was the original ECW, the second was the New Breed ECW original story, and then the third was the post-draft when we got Miz, Morrison, Boogeyman, Big Daddy V. I like that draft so much because we restocked in a unique way. We took a lot of cast-offs and ended up making them mean a lot very quickly.
Would it be frustrating? And like you obviously wrote for SmackDown as well before this, but where if you kind of do the legwork in terms of heating somebody up, and you know they're doing well on your show, and then they kind of just swoop in and say, "We're going to take him, bring him to Raw, and we're going to give you a Big Daddy V in return." Would that ever be frustrating?
To a point, but we're all being paid by the same people. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't my business. Meaning, I didn't own ECW. I didn't pay the guys. It wasn't my ultimate decision. My job was to manage it. And I think that's where sometimes people go a little off the reservation. Is it's Vince's money, and he ultimately has final say, and he gets to decide what it is. So was it disappointing? A little bit, but also I knew what we did for people and then saw them go over to another brand, and whatever happened was on them. Now, I was also still there, so, you know, or if somebody went from SmackDown to Raw, like we all were on the same team. I think that narrative has been pushed a little uniquely as far as, you know, oh, this guy ruined that guy. It's still the same company. All the same people sit in the same room. It's not, it was never, I mean, we had separate writing teams. But on a show day, we all were in the same room and everyone gave their opinion. So it's, you know, it sometimes is the pressure of the day. I mean, Monday's a much more pressury day than a Tuesday, or it used to be. And when it came to ECW, you know, Brian would be able to pitch Raw to Vince on a Thursday. You know, he would get 4 hours set aside. SmackDown would get 2.5 hours on Friday, and I would get what was left on a Friday after Vince has been meetinged out. So sometimes I would literally get 5 minutes to pitch him a main event to then make sure that Kevin Dunn could make a commercial that would air on Raw. And then 4 out of 6 times that main event would change the next day. So, but hey, guess what? It was a hell of a learning experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. I have nothing bad to say about it because ultimately, again, Vince has got $1 billion. I have a little bit less, just a little. Yeah. So, you know, it's really unique. And I think I sent this tweet out last night after Great Balls of Fire. I said the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was making sure we all really liked a show called Great Balls of Fire. So, I mean, he is a unique genius in one way. And, you know, it's an interesting story to kind of follow.
I think one of the most interesting things about ECW was how you'd get people in for a week. Like,
yeah, the guest star thing, which I think really kind of did it start as early. I mean, well, it launched with that, right? I mean, you had Edge and Cena because they were tied together with RVD, and then
you had Kane in there at times.
Well, Flair. I mean, the famous Flair match.
That Flair Big Show match is fantastic.
On July 11th, you know, a lot of people have a lot of varying opinions on that show. Is that the one? I think one of these shows. Don't think I've ever told this story. Paul Heyman, Brian Gewirtz, Ed Koski, and I drove home because the plane had been fogged in. We were somewhere in Virginia, and I think it was the July 11th show. It was the whatever show Big Dick Johnson debuted in Danced with Sandman, which I think it was July 11th. We drove from somewhere in Virginia, which I think was Roanoke, back to Stamford. It was like a 9-hour drive, and they gave us the tapes, the SmackDown tapes, to be edited because whatever was happening, the plane wasn't going to be able to take off till 1 o'clock. And this was when SmackDown was taped on Tuesday, and they had to turn the show around for the network the next day. I think SmackDown It had moved to Friday, I believe. So, but still, obviously, you know, them getting the tapes at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock and dubbed and transferred was not as good. So they gave Paul Heyman and I and Brian Gewirtz and Ed Koski the tapes to SmackDown after that show. We joked on the way of like what happens if something happens? So it was just a really unique thing. And it was actually, I think, after that big show. Or maybe it was the next week. I don't remember. Obviously, there's a lot of PTSD with some of this stuff. So, well, it's just I'd have to go back. And it's funny. The Botchamania guy has been going through these episodes already, and I'm like, oh yeah, we did that on that show. And there's a lot of not great segments. You know, I don't know how many times Stevie Richards wrestled God knows who. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of those, but there is some gems. You know what I mean? I think there's some really interesting stuff. We had Booker T on. I don't remember this at all.
Undertaker so, one week as well, wasn't he? Did a big show match?
Did he? Well, definitely there's the famous Batista. There's the famous Batista big show match from the Hammerstein, which is the show Punk debuted. I don't remember Taker, but if you believe it, I believe it. So yeah, I mean it's funny that they dropped it today. I don't know, no rhyme or reason, but it's definitely part of my canon, so
I think that's
Kelly.
Yeah, so. That's probably all of your WWE run probably is on the network at this stage, is it?
I think it is. I think everything from my whole career is on there. Yeah. Eventually, they'll probably buy ROH and the TNA library, and they'll have it all.
Yeah, just your whole career in one place to relive.
Well, obviously, at some point, I'm getting royalties based upon current information, so
right.
I'll wait. No,
so today's a happy day for you, so is it?
Well, I doubt. No, I'm saying there isn't. I mean, WWE. I mean, it was never discussed royalties or credit or any of that stuff. It's my bad joke. Yeah. So, I mean, I really, you know, I look back fondly because I was pretty burnt out by the year three or four of writing SmackDown. So, the pressure was not as strong, you know, to do this show. It was important, though. You know, remember we had Lashley, you know, the Lashley move and the Trump thing and. You know, we moved Lashley over to ECW before any of the Trump stuff began. But, like, there was all a lot of good stuff. Like, I just pulled up the February 27th episode where did Umaga throw Lashley through the cage or vice versa? That spot that ended, like, to this day, it's one of my favorite spots entire run.
Lashley jumped into the cage or something, wasn't it?
I think so. And I think they tried to replicate it. Or we tried to replicate it at TNA. I don't know. But what was unique was that it was on I remember because it was in San Jose. It says February 27th. That opened the show. Like we did ECW first because it was a West Coast. So we shot that. That show started at 7. So that was 10 Eastern. So we like on West Coast we would do ECW first. I think we did the Garden ECW episode first as well. For some reason, I think maybe because we did the Garden show on a Sunday. I just remember we did. ECW first at the Garden, which was if I would have told you in 1999 that ECW would broadcast a show from Madison Square Garden, everybody thought we were nuts. I think actually we did in front of a Raw. I think that's why it was. Like there were some times that we would do the ECW show in front of Raw and it would be taped, but I don't remember exactly all those things. But I mean, if you look at the talent, I mean, Elijah Burke, Punk, Marcus Corvin, you know, you love Monty Brown.
Who doesn't love Monty Brown?
Well, he was. Think about it. His WWE run was 6 months.
Yeah, more or less.
I hate to use the word disappeared, but he disappeared after week after the Benoit stuff.
Yep.
Actually, I think it was the week. I think it was the week after. He was supposed to appear on the show. The Great Khali won the world title. I think it was Laredo. And nobody had heard from him. And then finally somebody got him on the phone. And think about it, this is the week after Benoit, and your brain goes to a weird place, but, you know, he was fine. But he only had a 5-month run. You know, I think he had, I mean, I can't name one really, like, landmark match, except maybe that Extreme Rules match the night after WrestleMania.
Yeah, the 8-man tag, which you totally should have booked on WrestleMania, by the way.
It was discussed. They didn't want to have all those toys and craziness on WrestleMania. They wanted to save it for the other matches.
Didn't want ECW stealing the show.
I think they didn't want that match to have all the toys. Because again, it made the most sense, right? You know what I mean? It's the biggest show of the year.
And the TV match is much better than the WrestleMania match.
Oh, and the TV match was awesome. I remember Dusty being really excited by that one. Like, I won't do my Dusty impression, but I mean that, like, nothing screamed more mid-80s Crockett than that, you know, mixture of ECW and mid-80s Crockett that he really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry for Extreme Exposé, but I just saw that their picture pop up. By the way, I remember even back then when people would be, I mean, you'd read long diatribes in websites and all this stuff about how horrible it was. It was 1 minute of the show every week. Yeah. 1 minute. And by the way, that 1 minute always spiked up. And again, when your job is to get ratings, it's, you know, anything you do for 1 minute. And I think it's funny that, you know, all of them actually ended up doing decently in the business. You know, usually if you have an act like that, it's like, oh, two of the three or one of the three, but all ended up having pretty decent long careers. I mean, Brooke Adams is still wrestling in some form or fashion. Layla retired and Kelly's retired. But I mean, if she wanted to, she'd still be working.
You could walk back in that door tomorrow. Yeah,
exactly. There's a picture of Vince and Balls Mahoney. Here, I'll share a little. This might be the saddest, you know, now that he's passed. And in the Kelly Balls Mahoney story, I think now people can relive all of it. I think it went like 13, maybe 14 weeks, and maybe I'm misguessing, but it was, you know, it was the longest running storyline of the year in WWE. And I mean, remember, he gave her the bear, which is that picture of me and Dusty. We argued over that bear for hours.
Why? And,
Dusty thought it was silly. I thought it was very, you remember Balls Mahoney was in Smoky Mountain. I don't remember what his name was, but he had a cat, and they did the angle where the, you know, Chris Candido leg dropped the cat. I thought, okay, that's too far. But Balls was lovable, and, you know, him doing sweet things for this woman, and you know, eventually Vince got tired of the bear storyline too, so I wasn't going to die on the bear hill. And we were in Detroit, and Vince had The Miz kick the bear into the audience. And it was sad. I wanted him eventually to burn the bear in front of, you know, Kelly and Balls, but he just had him kick it. So, shockingly enough, about a year ago, the guy who caught the bear tweeted me. It was right after Dusty died, and he still has the bear, still has the Balls Mahoney's t-shirt. He's just some guy in Detroit that has this weird Balls Mahoney bear that Dusty and I argued about for hours. So it's funny. I didn't think about that until I literally just saw Kelly holding the Balls bear here on September 18th, 2007. So this is a rambling episode. I apologize, but this is a lot. This is a lot of ECW to take in at once, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there were, like, I think probably the best, you know, the moment when Punk beat Morrison, you know, September 4th. Yeah, like, it was his last chance. Again, that was an episode we taped on a Sunday. And I think I wrote an article about it years ago where, you know, Morrison and a lot of the talents had gotten, I think that was the wellness where they got like 27 guys at once.
Yep.
So it was an interesting story. Here's Punk, the straight edge guy that was having to basically step in and help the company after the Benoit stuff and after the straight edge stuff to be kind of the straight edge face of this brand. And I honestly don't know what would have happened if that didn't happen. I'm not going to say his career wouldn't have still gone the same trajectory, but I mean, it definitely helped his career to get that moment. And you know, his struggles went far beyond ECW, you know, as he moved forward in his career. But, you know, a lot of the early fights were in that ECW brand.
You had people like Armando Estrada.
Yeah, the Armando thing, when did he debut? He debuted some point in this run. Well, he was sitting at home. He could talk. He had a catchphrase that everybody knew. And I remember we pitched for like 3 or 4 weeks, and it just, like, they didn't want to do it. I'm like, you're paying him to sit at home. What does it hurt? Eventually somebody will beat him up, and then you can be done with it. But, like, when you have a brand that's very limited on its talent roster and you have a guy sitting at home who could talk, like, to me it just made the most sense in the world. And I'd have to go back and look and see when he debuted. I think even the way we debuted him was so left-handed. Like, he was just in the ring, and it was announced that he was the GM. I don't even think we did it right. So I always liked Armando. I thought he was very – he had a very unique gimmick, and I always thought there was a place for somebody like that on a brand, especially one like ECW. But then they brought him up when he even was with Umaga. They didn't want him to do his stuff that got him over. So, but I wasn't involved then. So anyway.
Is it easier to write a one-hour show? Like, it honestly, from a workload standpoint, it probably is. But
I mean, from a pure hours, yes. I mean, you don't hear about people's computers crashing as much. I think Macs have pretty much fixed that. But there were, I want to say, 3 or 4 times that I was writing SmackDown and, like, just the computer would crash. And, it like, you'd save it and it was gone. This was, like, weird mid-2000s Microsoft issues. And I didn't think about, you know, saving and dropping on a thumb drive, which I think we had thumb drives then. I don't remember. I'm trying to remember. I had a really nice IBM ThinkPad. It was very light, which I always enjoyed. But I was writing an episode once, and it just, the whole thing vanished. It just was gone. And, like, so I remember having to rewrite it from scratch from my brain, and I was able to write the whole thing pretty much out in about 45 minutes, like, just because I was so angry and I let the adrenaline. But, yeah, I mean, writing a SmackDown, and Vince had rules about the way, like, well, how to be, you couldn't write in first person. So, like you can't have Edge says and then comma and then put in quotes. You couldn't write like that. I'd have to, like you weren't allowed to write dialogue. So you had to write everything in sort of summary, and you couldn't go back and forth between tenses. And, like, it was like a midterm. I'm like, the only people who are ever going to see it is us. So he was very much a stickler. So you had to follow a lot of rules, which I think has been hammered home heavily on various things across the years. So, like, when we used to write the Impact one, some scenes were written out sort of, we weren't really kind of sticklers. Like, if sometimes I'd write the dialogue and then sometimes I wouldn't, it just didn't, but to slow the process down, to have rules for a script that, you know, isn't being registered with the Writers Guild, you know, it's whatever. But yeah, the 1 hour show, it was easy. And a lot of times we would, that Vince would get to the meeting, look at the show, go, no, we're not doing this. The one that I was able to famously keep, that he wanted to tear up from scratch, was the Halloween show. I think it was the Monster Mash, the October 30th, which I think might be my favorite because it was so ridiculous. That was the show Dreamer dressed up as Pauly. He had a hardcore match, I think, with Nunzio, who was a vampire, I think, or Dracula. CM Punk took kids trick-or-treating backstage. This was on Long Island. And then we did the Monster Mash. I remember we got there that day and, you know, tried to plan. Like, we had built this up for a week, and Dusty loved the Monster Mash Battle Royal because it was very similar to the Chamber of Horrors. And, you know, like, we built all these packages, and, like, it was like a 2-week build. We get there, Vince goes, I don't want to do this match. It's stupid. Just like, okay. But, I mean, like, I won't do the, well, it drew a number, bro, but I think it did well. You know, it was a unique main event. I mean, think about it. It was the Great Khali, Kane, Big Daddy V, and Mark Henry. I mean, like, that one I probably will watch today in my free time. Is that like, and that there's something else on that show. I think the Hardys were on that show too. Like, it was really a unique show. So I enjoyed that one a lot. So,
I'm not gonna say ECW didn't matter, but, like, in the grand scheme of things, did it matter if you did a Monster Mash match or not?
There's pride, you know what I mean? Like,
I don't mean the sense that you put out something bad on, but it's just like, it's ECW.
Well, I you have to remember, though, it was on television.
Yeah.
NXT gets a pass at times. I mean, I think if you go back and look at, we ran angles, like, literally, there's the Miz standing with 3 girls. We gave them, think about that. Would they give anybody 3 girls now? I guess he's got 3 people in his Miztourage, but, you know, you had Miz, Layla, Brooke Adams, and Kelly, and the Balls Bear, and Balls Mahoney in weekly segments. You know, it mattered to us, and, you know, Dusty was a very prideful man, you know, like, he really took, we had our bumps early in our relationship, but as soon as he liked being the head coach. And I think he did really well at NXT. And if you look at all the guys that he mentored down there and came through, he helped create a lot of amazing characters in NXT. And he was doing the same here. I mean, Big Daddy V was all him. And Big Daddy V should have been a much bigger character that he went on to be. When you bring up, like, oh, moving a talent, like, we were, again, Big Daddy V came to ECW July 4th of that year, and he was off the brand by, I think, December. They brought him over to work Undertaker on SmackDown. We had gotten him over in 3 months. And he was, think about it, it was the Viscera guy, you know what I mean? Like, for years, and we turned him into a monster in 3 months. I'm trying to think who else. Like, Boogeyman. I'm sorry, I like Boogeyman. I always love Boogeyman. people will make fun of it because he never had a match over one star. But he was a character, and I like characters. So, you know, the brand had a lot, and then the Miz and Morrison. I mean, like, those guys, nobody wanted. It was like the draft, and it was like, do you guys just want them? Like, I didn't even have to trade. It was just like, do you guys want these two? And, you know, Morrison, I think, was a little bit higher profile anyway at the time. But, you know, Miz was like a do not hire. Like, let's – like, he had been doing jobs. I think he lost the Undertaker in like a minute, 2 weeks before or in that period. Like, he really – I think he was – he flourished. And I think everyone thought Morrison was going to be the better all-around guy. And I think they both have done amazing. And, like, that period, I think, really helped their careers. So it did matter to me. I mean, the show always mattered to me, even when it was like, it doesn't matter, pal. You know, it did. I mean, even Shelton got – I forgot Shelton got rebranded as the Gold Standard in that period too. You know, we're trying to, like, remake guys.
In the post-Mal Benjamin era, that was a little necessary.
Yeah. And Shelton – I like Shelton a lot, and I've worked with him in a lot of places. And, you know, I think he's – I wouldn't call him a miss. I just, you know, I think he never really got – I mean, he had plenty of chances. I just – you know, I think he should have been bigger, so.
Yeah, there's just some people who it doesn't work out for. So we look at – there's – obviously, your run is up until the middle of 2008, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it was right before the Rumble.
So it started 2008.
It was the Chavo Guerrero title switch was right before my end. So
yeah, basically everything after that isn't your fault, but yeah,
probably if you want to blame me, go ahead. I'm joking. I love blame. I'll take it.
I really liked the show. I remember people like Kofi showed up right around that year as well, and you know you had people like Miz and Morrison and people like Christian after your era and like Yoshitatsu has never looked as good as he looked on ECW.
What happened was, and I think Ed Koski took over after I left, but like first year Jack Swagger was awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I loved that dude then. You know what I mean? He like Christian was great on that show. You know, Zack Ryder up until the woo-woo-woo stuff, that was the best stuff he ever did. Because what it was and you can ask from Paul Burchill to Shane Helms, they weren't bothered. And it's very similar again to NXT that the guys just get to go out and just try stuff. And I think even now if you look at like Talking Smack or whatever, when you ease up on the pressure, you'd be surprised the talent that rises. And when somebody sucks, they suck on their own. They don't need help sucking. So and trust me, there's a lot of talents who sucked, you know, and who couldn't get over it, but the audience tells you. And I think that's if the business heads that way, I think. And what's funny is ECW is launched as this original online content brand. I think there's room in the marketplace for a brand like that.
Especially, like, maybe it might not have worked in 2006, but there sure as hell is place for it in 2017.
Well, I mean, especially for if you were to run this brand as an online only and take it off the network, because, again, I don't even remember. I think it was going to be a free show. It was going to be a free show on WWE.com, because remember, YouTube was about 6 weeks old. I mean, I'd have to go look. You know, it was going to be really experimental, and then remember they put it on they put the show on the website, but they wouldn't call it ECW. They called it the letter X - stream. So all the marketing materials on the website said watch Xtreme, but didn't have any ECW logos. And I assume they did that because again, ECW was the only brand that they digitally didn't USA didn't own the rights to. They could do whatever they wanted to. And so it was just really unique that I remember getting in a somewhat of a disagreement with the guy that ran WWE.com, Brian Kalinowski, about that. And I'm like, you have ECW, you can promote it, and you call it something differently. So it's confusing. And he said, well, maybe if the show was better. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And by the way, at the time,
that's a cheap shot.
Well, and I said, and by the way, WrestleZone is getting more unique visitors than WWE.com at the time, which was true. So, I mean, like, this was a very spirited disagreement with the two of us. So,
and like, especially like, if you look at Miz and Morrison during that era, it was the online show, it was the dirt sheet that gathered their momentum in the first place.
Yep. I mean, and that's the point. And I'm not shy on my Twitter or anywhere talking about talents taking more control, and Miz and Morrison really did that. John Cena, people forget about Five Questions with John Cena. You wonder why John Cena is so over with so many people, because he used to answer questions of fans every week. Brooklyn Brawler used to produce that. It never gets mentioned. Like, that ground game that Cena put in very early on really helped him. And I think, I will get off my soapbox after this, if talents stop sticking their hands out, asking for money all the time, and they actually, like, and just gave more to the fans, they, in the long run, it will pay out. So I will end my diatribe on that.
But you just got to look at Zack Ryder with the YouTube show. You could look at The Elite now with the YouTube show. Yeah. It's just reaching the audience in different ways without, as you said, they'll give you money in the end. The Elite are not wanting for cash at the moment, but like, they just provide some extra content for people.
And by the way, they could charge for that show.
They could.
But they're smart enough, and I've talked to them both about it. They get it. And, you know, and their numbers steadily grow as they get more subscribers. And by the way, they shoot it on their phone.
Yeah.
On their phone. They don't, like, when I shoot my stuff, you know, I put a lot of, you know, I have three cameras, and they literally shoot it and edit as they go, and they don't have a video guy. They learned how to use iMovie on their phone. So I wish I would have dove into this a lot sooner than now, but it's really not that hard. There's a website that can teach you really anything, and it's called Google. And if you used it to Google how to do stuff, you'd be surprised what you can learn. Teach yourself. I retaught myself online editing in the last 2 years, and I have a lot to learn, but guess what? I don't need to hire an editor anymore, and I get to save that money. So
there are anyway. Four.
All right, years... I told you, get me off my soapbox.
Yeah, we'll pivot back to ECW. There are 4 years of episodes. Obviously, you're two and a bit. Any episodes you recommend people digging into this? It's obviously overwhelming.
Well, obviously, the Monster Mash, which was October 30th, 2007. I would say the September 4th, 2000 episode, when Punk won the title.
Which, that match against Morrison is fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know what's on this episode, but the thumbnail makes me want to watch it. The August 21st, 2007 episode. There's a picture of Balls Mahoney and Vince McMahon. I don't remember this scene, but I would watch it. You also have to remember that I assume it is on here. I'll be curious if Vince's speech is on here. The day after Benoit, we did a live episode of ECW. So that would have been
June
26th.
Yeah.
So that started with Vince's, you'll never hear the name Chris Benoit ever again. I'm curious if that is on that episode. I know it ran on SmackDown as well that week. But this show aired, that episode, the ECW 55 aired under 24 hours after the, you know, the news broke. So that was from San Antonio. Let me look what else. Obviously, the night after WrestleMania, with the what do you call it match? Is that the April 3rd? So ECW 43, and then Vince McMahon versus RVD. And I'm going to save this story for another time, but. That was one of the, there was a, we had a, I think it was the May 1st episode. Vince did the in-ring with all the ECW guys, pitted them against each other, that the winner would face Vince next week. And then the May 8th was Vince and RVD. And that was, I remember an argument disagreement I had with Vince. He goes, well, we don't have to do the match. Like, you advertised it. The whole show the week before was building to it. If you didn't want to do it, or you didn't want to fight RVD, you should have picked Dreamer. You know what I mean? Like he didn't, like, he wanted to just cancel the match and just not even address it. And I understand, like, I think the idea of Vince getting in the ring with RVD was unique. I don't remember if it drew, but it was unique. So I'm trying to think what else in those. I think those are the ones I would really go out of your way. There is one, what I believe would be the, I want to watch the one from Little Rock, which I think was January 16th, 2007. I think that was the, I want to watch that one because... that was called the worst hour of pro wrestling ever produced by the company. So
who called it that?
many people on a plane, and I had to take credit for it. So I don't remember. I remember just the matches were really bad. I mean, and
it was all Monty Brown's fault.
Well, I don't think he wrestled. Maybe he did wrestle. I don't remember. But that actually led to Vince being on the show. I don't know if it was the next week. It was whatever show was from Little Rock. So it was either the 23rd or the 16th because it was a terrible show. I remember we had a meet. I think that was the meeting the next week where I said, let's stop calling it ECW. And that we got Vince to come on the show and it started the New Breed angle. So that show changed a lot of careers. I'll just say that much. Because if it wouldn't have been as bad, I think we would have just kept going on. I think that was what led to me getting Shawn Michaels for about 2 week period, or that's what led to me getting Dusty full time. So those are some episodes to check out. But yeah, I think people will enjoy watching it because I don't think a lot of people did get to watch it at the time. So I think Steve Austin was on a show. I don't even remember this one at all. He was on the March 6th episode. I don't remember that at all. So.
So there's some hidden gems that not even you remember.
I got nothing. So, so yeah, this will be fun. I think people will. Here's the thing: can you not download the network to your phone like Netflix? Like you can't download episodes of stuff, right?
No,
you have to watch the streaming. God, that would be like I would download some of these and like as I travel or I'm at the gym, I would watch these. So I don't know if I'd sit down at my and make popcorn and watch them, but you know, I don't know. So. Well, we've officially killed this to death, haven't we?
Yep. Before we go, do you have anything to plug?
No, not yet. Soon. Very soon. Very, very, very soon. But yeah, just my Twitter, at Lagana, which I want to thank everybody who... I found those Great Balls of Fire's pictures to be very humorous, and somehow they gained traction on Twitter. Had one to get like 400 retweets, which is like nearly my high of stuff I'm involved in stuff. So I don't know. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was good. I think you had a great quote about this is exactly what sports entertainment wrestling is supposed to be. So yeah. This is what sports entertainment ECW look like. So
as I see the thumbnail of Bobby Lashley jumping at a cage, what more do you want from life?
That was a good show. Bobby Lashley, Vince McMahon, Marcus Corvan, Ariel. I mean, what more do you need from a wrestling show?
Yeah, you have zombies, you have vampires, you have monster mashes, the Sandman, everything's in there.
When is this ECW reunion? Which actually, by the way, I did it. I did this version of ECW reunion when Dixie Carter brought in the stars of ECW into when Bully was fighting her in the table show, when she brought in Snitsky and Zeke, because she thought these were the stars of ECW. you're all very welcome for the very just... I don't think anybody got the semblance that she didn't know that those weren't the original ECW guys.
So. I never got that was the point of that, and it's brilliant.
You're all very welcome. So,
thanks, Dave.
Of course, talk to you soon.